We're the Lore Hounds, and how long is baby Jane Doe going to have to wait? John, I don't know, John, maybe we could just put on Elf on an infinite loop repeating in her room, see if we can break Mel's record. I'm David, and if I can get off the course in under 112 strokes, I'm doing really good.
I'm John, and I am empathetic, really. I just hate Ogilvy.
There are two kinds of people in this world, John. Those who have empathy and those who hate Ogilvy.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Yeah, I hate the guy without empathy. What is that? The paradox of tolerance?
Yes.
I don't tolerate intolerance.
Which is a great Austin Powers line from Goldmember, which I believe is the second one.
What
did
is
you
that?
Ever see
I don't
those?
Tolerate intolerance?
Yeah, there's two kinds of people in the world. People who... Oh, what is it? People who... Oh, now I'm blanking.
This is our coverage of season 2, episode 10 of The Pit.
Somebody write in.
Sorry, episode 11 of The Pit, 5 p.m. And you can email us at ptmc@thelorehounds.com or go to our Discord if you want to chat with us about this show. A lot of fun stuff. We have a lot of things linked in the show notes. David, you've put together a show guide on Notion.
Yes, we have. And I apologize for being a little spacey. I did actually kind of knock my back out yesterday. And so not unlike Langdon. I'm a little bit fuzzy today, but yes, there is a show guide and you can go to the show notes and you can link to it there. Nancy, our hand of the pod, has been keeping it updated, and you can look at the list of patients by episode and you can see all of the different hospital staff that we're encountering, the residents, the medical students, the nursing staff. Even she's even gone so far as getting some of the names of some of the police officers and paramedics and such. So it is a pretty comprehensive thing.
Very cool. It's very helpful because I forget the names of people all the time. There's just so many people coming in and out.
Exactly.
And could you imagine being a doctor having to remember all of these names as you go in and out? It's
yeah. It's the number tough. Of patients that you see in a day. Right. Oh, and then the other thing I'll just say is it's really great on your mobile when you're watching. It's it conforms to that form factor really well. And so it's a great little, oh wait, yeah. Who is that nurse? Oh yeah. Just look it up real quick. So,
well, what did you think of the episode, David?
Man, F this episode. I don't know. I kind of want to save my takes for like, let's just get into the episode, but this was a hard ass episode.
It was.
I was really feeling kind of mad at the end. A lot of dark moments, but maybe we should just get our pity party over and get into the episode. What did you think?
I'm just reading your note about Ogilvy and it made me mad. So I think we have to go into it.
See? The intolerant. What is it? Empathy intolerance? What is it?
I forget you don't tolerate intolerance. That's right. The paradox of tolerance, right?
Exactly.
Anyway, I thought it was a great episode. It enraged me at points. It made me very sad at points. Everybody, I feel like we closed out a lot of arcs here. We closed out a lot of like long running arcs from the season.
Yes. Yep.
So I wonder if we're building towards now we're going to have some kind of big event for the next few episodes, like we did Pit Fest last season, right? Obviously, we have one thing keeping Robbie there already that he's going to stay overtime for, which is Duke's testing. Who knows what else is going on? Also, what is it with Al Hashimi? Like, does Robbie stick around after a shift? Like, she's sick of him.
Yeah.
She is sick of him.
She's ready to go. I did feel like this episode was, what are they, everybody saying? Only 2 hours left, right? And we're going a couple hours beyond their shift. So, yeah, something weird's going to happen. But, yeah. They're all just feeling tired, burned out. It's hot. It's been a really super stressful and busy day. And you just feel everybody's sort of getting on nerves.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just get right into it? Because
yes,
there's so much
content
thinking. In this episode.
Yeah. We do have feedback from Sarah.
Okay. Want to get into it right away?
Yeah, might as well throw it in there. Yeah, because this kind of ties up from stuff from last week. Do you want to give it a shot?
Sure. Hola. I believe David was asking about Garcia's role last week. From what I can tell, they're portraying Garcia as a trauma surgery fellow. This means she has completed her residency and is doing 1 to 2 years of additional training in a specialty, in this case, trauma surgery. Typically, you might not see the fellow quite this often. For the walk-in type of patient, an emergency department physician would ask for a surgical consult once they evaluate the patient and determine the possible need for surgery. A resident first or second year would come and evaluate the patient and report back to their senior, and then maybe you would get the fellow to show up and see the patient. A fellow is typically in the operating room and would show up between OR cases to see patients. This was portrayed with the necrotizing fasciitis patient when the brand new intern, aka a first year resident, Mosley, showed up to do the evaluation, and they yelled at him to get someone who knew what they were doing. As an aside, I got a kick out of this point of accuracy. The new residents graduate from med school in May and become doctors, in quotation marks, in July when they start their residency. So in this scene, when they are saying something along the lines of, get us someone who's been a doctor more than 2 weeks, I laughed because it was so true. In the event of a trauma alert patient coming in, critical patient coming in by ambulance with advance notice of the hospital so they have time to gather the trauma treatment, the fellow would most likely already be in the emergency department ready to evaluate the patient quickly and get them stable enough for the operating room and to the OR as fast as possible. It seems that for dramatic purposes, we see Yo-Yo breeze in and out more frequently than real-life fellows do. Easily forgivable, since no one wants to see a bunch of unknown residents bumbling through a surgical consult. Looking forward to our upcoming chat. CMC to the Lorehounds. Sarah.
Cool. All right. So I think that explains a little bit more about Yo-Yo's role. She probably enjoys coming down and, you know, flashing the emergency department and flashing her know-it-all.
You said flashing. I was like,
that's not the wrong word.
What she's doing. What she does to Santos.
Her skills, flashing her skills.
Right.
Yeah. Her big brain. She was flashing her big brain.
All right. Yeah. And her sass. She's got plenty of sass.
For real.
Well, thank you, Sarah. That's very helpful. I agree. It would be less entertaining to have randos show up every episode.
Right. And we should be having a chat with Sarah, hopefully in the next week or so. And that'll be cool.
Very cool.
Get some insider knowledge.
Well, we've got a lot to cover this episode. Should we get right to the meat of Battle of the Titans?
Sure. Mel and Becca.
Oh, no. I was going with Langdon and Santos. I guess we have multiple battles. I don't know. I'd call Mel a Titan. I don't know if a non-employee can be a Titan in this show.
She did give a really nice bye-bye. I'm ready to go now.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just thinking of, Dr. v. Doctor.
Yes, okay. Well, let's talk about Langdon and Santos then.
I have my internet points for this? The way she explained why she was upset is exactly how I explained it last week.
Okay.
You get to waltz back in here. Everyone's so happy for you. Everyone's like proud of you for being in recovery, and no one even knows what you did. And I had to be yelled at my first day and treated like shit my first day. And now everyone's just proud of you and I get shoved back.
Right. And she has worked hard to be, liked, but to earn her place in the emergency department.
Mm hmm.
Yeah, and then the golden boy shows up, and she's like, oh, this dude?
Right, exactly. And he goes, well, you don't know, my wife left me. And this is a common tactic of people who are manipulative, is when they get called out on their bullshit, they go, well, it also negatively affected me, right? But his actions affected him. His actions also affected her. Her actions didn't affect him, other than she was the vehicle for his accountability, which was a ticking time bomb the entire time. And honestly, probably getting him caught that early was a huge boon for him. The fact that he was not totally self-destructive yet.
Yep.
I mean, she probably caught that so early. He would have been just going down that rabbit hole. He was still stealing that day.
Yeah.
Anyway, he would have kept telling himself, oh, I'm just doing this to wean off. and you know,
right? He would have kept telling the stories. With this tender back that I have today, I can totally get the idea that, nobody's going to miss this. I'll just sort of, you know, take a little bit. I do important work here. I've got to say, I'm a doctor and we're teaching hospital, all this stuff. He would have had a whole series of excuses lined up.
Right. And, we've had our disagreements on apologies, David, but I did appreciate that Langdon said, apology gate. I did appreciate that Langdon said, you don't have to accept the apology. But I do also think that highlights that, like, apologies are in large part to make the apologizer feel better.
Right.
Now, I know that I draw a line between apologies and restitution. I think that, restorative apologies that come with, like, I want to make this right. What can I do to make this right? That is a different thing. And I don't think that's what Langdon is offering. Because Santo said, you want to make it right? Come out and tell everybody what you did.
Yeah. There's a mechanic to apologies, which is to acknowledge that the harm was done, to acknowledge the impact that it had on somebody else.
Right.
Like, hey, I was high and I treated you like shit. And, I know that your status in the emergency department is compromised by the fact that you look like the rat, and you've got to clean up all of that stuff. You've got to acknowledge all of those places where it hurt, and then you got to be able to, like you said, make restitution. What do I need? What can I do? And you got to make a new promise, like, hey, I won't do that again. And if I do, then you have every right to smack me over the head with a bedpan or whatever.
Yeah,
but there's a mechanic to it, right? There's a couple of 2-3 steps for a real apology to be an apology.
And let's be clear, Santos basically called it out. Like, 3 people know what happened.
Right.
2 of those 3 people don't want him there anymore.
Does Yo-Yo not want him there? No, Santos doesn't want him there. Yo-Yo doesn't care.
Yeah, Santos and Robbie do not want him there.
Right.
Why did we start calling her Yo-Yo? I have not. I know that
from Sarah's Sarah said email. That,
but anyway.
Dr. Garcia.
Dr. Garcia. Yeah, let's show her. Let's put some respect.
Put some respect on that.
Put some. Not that she gives respect to anybody else, but let's respect her anyway.
Fair enough.
So,
and then of course it drops right at the end of the episode, before the effing cliffhanger, and then we have Al-Hashimi lurking around the corner there. I kind of think today, this episode, she's like Uatu, the Watcher, which is a Marvel reference. I'm thinking of you, Jean. And she's just picking up all these conversations and looking around and just being present. She doesn't say stuff a lot of times. When she was talking to Langdon earlier, she says, "Oh, do you guys have history?" And she just stayed quiet. And he was like, "Oh, fill silence. And, she's really confident and, in that way, and just listening and watching. And I think that's just a really great characteristic. I was really worried at the beginning of the season how they were going to play her out, and I'm really appreciating the nuance that they're giving Dr. Al-Hashimi this season.
How do you think she avoids getting thrown under the bus for any malpractice? She's got a dossier on everybody.
Right, she's got dirt on all of them.
That's right. Gloria is never going to fire her because she knows all of Gloria's dirt. She lurks outside the administrative office on her breaks.
There you go. So, have you ever had a back issue? I was curious. I was wondering about.
Not a severe one.
Okay.
No, not a severe one. Has this been a frequent thing for you, or just
no? It's totally sort of random. This is, I think, the only second time in my life where my back has tweaked out. Okay. The first time it was a proper injury. I had been doing when I lived overseas, I did a big, I was an area manager for this company in Bush, and we did this big mapping project. And we had this big fancy GPS thing, and then I was going to these different areas, mapping all the roads and the boundaries as well. That was just one project I had in this job. Mm-hmm. And we were loading the plane one day, and I was standing under the wing, so I was a little ducked over, and I picked up this Pelican case, and my back just went like click. Oof. And I was out for like two, three weeks.
Oh, gosh.
It was rough. And then yesterday I just woke up and it just slowly came on. I think it's because I've been sleeping at a weird angle or something like that. It is really, like, back injuries are...
Yeah, there's a reason people end up on disability for them.
You can't bend over. Like, I tried to move the cat off the table the other day, and, you know, lifting from your arm requires that your hips are engaged to counteract that force. And I was like, oh my God. Yep.
No so, can do.
So when Langdon is lifting Micah, the little kid, and we see his face clearly go, oh man. So I wonder what they're doing with that storyline. Is he going to, how's he going to manage his back pain for the rest of the shift?
I don't know. There's something else I want to talk about with recovery. There's a couple points of recovery in this episode,
sure.
Including with the baseball guy. Remind me of that.
Oh, that was, go ahead.
I don't know if you saw, and I didn't see either. Somebody on the internet pointed it out, but he had a recovery bracelet on, which adds a lot of context to why he did not want any morphine or
that
any
totally,
other
I did not realize that. That was the hardest scene, though. Like, I could deal with the xylazine wound.
Oh, no, I'd kick the arm one any day.
Oh, no.
I can't do the gore.
I had to look away
from the gore.
I plugged my ears. I looked away. I was like, nope, I can't do an elbow reduction.
There are reasons I never went anywhere near medicine. There are reasons. Oh, boy.
What else did you have on the recovery angle?
Well, first of all, I just want to say on Santos, I don't know if I necessarily agree with all her points of, like, you should tell everybody what you did. Because from a utilitarian standpoint, he is a good doctor. He did do the work to get back. But I also understand her saying, I think she's well within her rights to set boundaries of, like, look, we work together. I'll be professional, but we're done other than that. I'm not working with you. I don't want to work with you. If I can avoid being on a case with you, I will. I think she's well within her rights for that. I don't think that, I mean, look, she could demand he tell everybody what happened, but I don't think the world is better off without a Dr. Langdon.
Interesting. Yeah. So utilitarian philosophy.
From a utilitarian standpoint, but also that is the excuse that a lot of people give for abusers in general, right? Is, well, you wouldn't want to ruin that promising person's life by making an accusation, right?
And it puts more onus on Santos than if they did sort of strike a bargain.
Yeah.
Let's avoid each other. I will be watching you. And if you relapse, I'll be the first one. And it's going to, but all of that is energy on Santos when she did nothing wrong. She did legally and ethically the right thing, which was to call it out and report it up.
And I wonder what Al-Hashimi would think of. I mean, I actually hope that you're right that she overheard it, because I wonder what she would think of Miss I've Never Been Sued this whole thing of Robbie sweeping this under the rug.
So that's a really good point, too. When I did my second watch yesterday, stretched out and going through it really.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not sure if she was close enough to hear the conversation. She certainly was close enough to get the tone of the conversation and of Santos's attitudes towards Langdon. So whether she actually heard any words is ambiguous, I think, at best. Does she see that the beef is not resolved? She's clearly got that. She clearly has that. So it where they go with the story, we'll just kind of have to wait and see.
I like your note on Robbie and Mohan, how it's rich coming from Robbie to say that you have to leave your, you know, there has to be a wall. You have to leave your personal life on the outside. He literally brought his problems inside with Duke.
Yeah. Oh, good call. Good call.
Of course, we had him ignoring patients that could be saved for his not son's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
We had...
Yeah, Duke jumps the line. It's not even Duke coming in. It's that he's jumping the line and getting an x-ray red and all, you know, sort of out of sequence and all of that.
Right. I am not, I'm not a fan of Robbie with this plot line. he's not doing great. They are pissing me off with Robbie. And I think that is intentional. I think they're going to try to make us go, thank God Al-Hashimi's here by the end of the season. I did see someone make a funny beep about her. They said, you know how you can tell when a woman is ridden by a man? Well, I can tell that this woman was ridden by a Vulcan, because she's just no emotion half the time. And not the acting, but the writing is very, like, logical.
Right. And which is why I was saying this whole thing where she'll listen. Or she'll ask a question and then wait for the answer.
Dr. She won't feel it. Your treatment of Mohan is not logical.
I love it. Did you see the look that she drops when Robbie leaves the trauma room when she asks if the hospital has gotten a lawyer for the ICE detainee? The look she gives Robbie as Robbie's leaving. She looks at his back with this like, this guy is sus. She was like, so remember last episode, there was a look on Robbie's face where he was hella impressed with her slash trach tracheotomy, right? And he was like, oh, damn, girl's got some skills. And then this one, she's like, hey, are we getting a lawyer for that detainee? And he's like, no, and walks out. And she looks very disappointed at Robbie.
I thought that this reflected very poorly on Robbie, actually, because I'm going to bring race into it. We had a white woman earlier in the season with the necrotizing flesh, and he picks up the phone to her boss and says, you fire her. I will encourage her to sue you, and I will testify on her behalf. Really goes to bat for that woman. Doesn't really go to bat against ICE. Now, let's be honest. ICE is currently a paramilitary lawless force, and
if you don't like that, you can not listen to this podcast.
Yeah, I will not mince my words about ICE. It is currently running like the secret police. And I understand being more fearful of ICE than of a random boss threatening to fire his employee. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Robbie's acting out of fear. I do know that he did at least stand up a little bit to them.
He dropped on that guy.
Hey, get out of here. I have people leaving. We're short nurses. We have a crisis here, and you're not helping. And then, of course, they do what ICE has been doing and completely botch the situation.
So they kind of sucker punched us with the ICE storyline, because if everybody thought that, what was it, two episodes ago was the quote-unquote ICE episode, and everybody's like, oh, that was pretty mild. That wasn't too bad. This was the ICE episode. Right.
Oh, yeah. I actually forgot about that. I did not think that was fully going to be the ICE episode. I did expect it to be more toned down because I had heard that HBO asked the showrunners to make it a balanced storyline.
That went around the internet. Yeah.
Now, I agree with what this show said, and I don't think this was a balanced storyline. You know what I mean? And in a good way, I think that it showed truth and not just both sides, you know, like, oh, this is what one side has to say about it. This is what the other side, like, no, this is how things are operating. Like, let's say people's names, you know, the nurse, Jesse.
Yep. Who's Jesse a real nurse in real life.
Right. What's his name?
Oh, do you want, I'm looking it up in the show guide right now. The actor or the, Jesse Van Horn is his full name, played by Ned Brower.
Okay, Alex Preddy is what I was talking about. Alex Preddy was a nurse killed by ICE a few weeks ago.
You're talking real world.
I am kind of wondering if they added Jesse being arrested in response to the Alex Preddy event, because that's so specific, a male nurse being arrested for helping a woman.
It's even closer, isn't it? God, I didn't even think about
it. It's really close, other than the fact that he's alive, I guess. But pretty crazy.
I'm going to look up when principal photography stopped.
Yeah, because they were still filming at the beginning of the season. I just realized, yeah.
Season two. That's and if it wasn't intentional, then it's, again, one of those life art sort of things. Principal photography in the second season officially wrapped around January 20th of this year. Alex Preddy. January 24th. So I think it's... Oof. No, they couldn't have. I don't think they could have.
No. Unless they did a reshoot, but still, I feel like that's a big change. They wouldn't have been able to write Jesse out of...
I think the tone down part is that they didn't show the altercation between Jesse and the ICE agent beyond Jesse initially stepping in. Because then we hear it all off camera and we hear the help, you know, kind of Robbie, come running.
That,
and then
that could be. I will say, though, that like that's not uncommon for the storytelling in this show. Right. Mm-hmm. Is that something happens off camera? And you're like, oh, shit, we got to run and deal with this now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
And I don't know. I think, too, in terms of the judiciousness of the storytelling, they didn't. Again, this show is very grounded in reality. Yeah, there's some exposition. Well, did you know that this happens to 1 in 20 people, blah, 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 right? You know, they'll turn to the camera sometimes and give us a straight reading of, you know, limes and cutting limes in sunset or something like that, right? So, but it works. That's part of the conceit of the show. But in terms of everything else, and who these characters are and how people respond to stress and how an institution responds to these kinds of circumstances, this story construction, this subplot, reads very real. Like that is, that could, like this, there's nothing out of the ordinary here. There's nothing thrown in here for extra drama.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen worse things happening. Worse things are happening. Worse things, this is actually less severe than what has happened in the last 2 months.
Right.
And people, look, I don't want to go deep into politics here, but sure, you know, there's enforcing the law and then there's ignoring the law. And quite frankly, ICE has gotten to the point of ignoring the law. And here we see that, right? They are refusing to, in this show, and again, pretty close to reality here, refusing to allow this woman to get her legally required medical attention, right? Emergency medical care under EMTALA.
Right. So EMTALA is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act. Mm-hmm. It's a 1986 federal law that requires Medicare participating hospitals that have emergency departments that they must provide medical screening examination. MSE is what, you know, that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's the acronym for what we're calling it. To stabilize and treat patients, regardless of their insurance status, ability to pay. And it was partly in response to prevent patient dumping. So somebody would show up on, you know, in the emergency department at this one hospital, and they say, well, no, you got to go to that hospital over there. And so they were shipping patients around, which we had Mr. Garcia earlier this season. Or who is the guy with the
elbow? It was somebody else. Had a surgery in another hospital.
If now, only there was a patient guide that I could look this information up in.
Well, the point is, I will say, I think that they are going to bring perhaps an alternative opinion to the foray next episode with Nurse Peters, because she did seem to be a little chummy with the ICE agents.
Right. Yeah. Totally caught that, right? That she was talking to the ICE agent across the thing when Robbie goes over to confront him.
And I will tell you, if she opens her mouth in defense of what they did, I guarantee you Dana is going to throw her out the door herself.
Dana was pretty short with her to begin with about the patient thing, which is what I was, you know, I think is that issue of everybody's getting on nerves here, right? It's the end of the shift. And she snaps at her, saying, no, we're leaving her. We're not moving her. So stop bringing it up.
Right. Yeah, I just...
in reference to Roxy. Sorry, let me...
oh, yeah, Roxy. That. Yeah.
Because she's like, hey, we need the bed. And Dana's like, no, we're not moving her until we move her, period.
Right. Yeah, that's... Dana has an intense empathy. And she does, and it can go both ways, but here it's like, hey, leave that grieving husband alone.
Yeah, give him a minute, right? It's fine. Yeah. Which, again, it gets into this whole thing of we have excellent care. It's the ability to allocate those resources. And it's one thing, you know, I was just thinking about, oh, well, how long did Becca got to jump the queue, and she took up a room for an hour.
Yeah.
Right? She came in last episode, and she's leaving
this episode. That's tough, isn't it? Your doctor sister gets you in. It's,
Yeah, or Duke.
Makes you a bit uncomfortable with both of those situations, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then at the same time, our doc, you know, that they've got some empathy and, you know, they're looking after their own, that makes that, you know, it's a complex, right? If they're distracted and
right.
Worried about
I think it's like, look, if there were someone needing, like if there was someone needing the trauma room, they're not going to like take up they're not going to let somebody die to help these people. Right. If someone is coming in for a sprained ankle, then yeah, they might, somebody else might cut the line.
Right.
And that, like, I'm not really comfortable with that, but it enrages me less.
Right. Or even with, say, the patient who came in who was from the prison, right?
Right.
And they got in the room upstairs because of, because he was starving.
Or the woman with ICE, right? They said, get her in and out because we have other people in the building who don't want to be around ICE. It's tough. We're in a tough situation right now. So,
which is again why this episode was just like, oh man,
yeah,
like, screw it's you really guys.
Just a million uncomfortable moments. Let's take a break, David, and then we'll come back and move on from our political woes.
Sounds good.
There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9 to 5. Where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
We're back. You want to talk about death?
Sure. I haven't done it before, but, you know, I'm happy to talk about it.
You got any tips? Roxy's dead. That was quick. And, of course, McKay had stepped out.
Yep.
Not a great look.
No. And stepped out with Ogilvy. And so I think Robbie was... I mean, again, Robbie isn't wrong in his assessments, but he's not right in his management style.
Yeah, I mean, that is a lawsuit waiting to happen, right?
Totally.
If Ogilvy contracts something.
When he was playing Frogger, like running across the street there.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. Was that part of his duties? No. Okay. Everybody's getting sued.
Right. And you don't let those lawyers down again.
Yeah. And I mean, that kind of went back and forth with the Kiki thing, right? Kiki was the name of the one in the park?
Yeah, Kiki.
Mm-hmm. She's not looking good with that leg lesion.
So xylazine wounds or trank wounds, slow healing skin ulcerations and necrotic sores caused by xylazine, which is oftentimes linked with fentanyl. And xylazine is a veterinary
tranquilizer.
Thank you. My mouth broke. And the wounds can go like really deep and expose muscle and bone. It's just, and I think they showed us pretty well what a xylazine wound looks like. And I would not recommend... Unless you're Joy Kwan and you're interested in pathology, do not go Googling xylazine wounds.
Oh my God, I'm not going to.
So
can I tell you though that this is the scene that made me decide that Ogilvy is not a redeemable character or a character that intended to be redeemed in this show. Okay,
so let's talk about that. Why?
Because he has every chance here to... McKay brought him specifically, I think, because he's had so much trouble with empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, let's give you the chance.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly had no empathy for this woman. He's like, why would you do that? What mm-hmm. are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then he comes back in and she goes, hey, this, you know, the street team needs a lot of help. It's a good experience. You should do it. And he goes, yeah, I guess. Like something like that. It was very dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
I just fucking hate this guy. He's just so sniveling, so holier than thou, and not even that great of a doctor. He's messed up several times now. he has all the ego of a surgeon and none of the skills.
Right. And he's gunning for his third intubation. And I kind of read his look at Kiki was as he was trying to get into, he was trying to find it within himself.
But it wasn't there. It just wasn't there. I don't understand any context that was in that scene that would make you go, man, he was really feeling for her, because he was really like just dismissive the whole time. And when he got back in, he was like, ick, don't want to be involved with that.
Well, okay, but Street Team isn't necessarily for everyone, right? So
no,
that's fair. I don't begrudge him that. I did wonder though, too, this is a little bit of my headcanon trying to be tolerant of Ogilvy, is there's a lot of, okay, I'll preface this. I'd be curious to hear what people thought, because there's a couple of looks exchanged between Kiki and Ogilvy. And to me, it wasn't clear what either actor was portraying on their face, which is great. I love the ambiguity. I love that we get to then paint with our brushes, right? We get to bring our context to read a response there. We get to, you know, fill in the gaps. And one of the thoughts that came to me was, I wonder if Ogilvy is thinking, but for the grace of God, could I be this person? Could I have ended up in this position as well?
I'm giving you a look now, which is, there is no context for that. But that is all from your head.
Yeah. Did I just say that?
But we can only go on what the show tells us, right?
Well, I'm adding that.
Shows us. All right. Fine.
I can't argue
with your psychosis.
I'm not saying that Ogilvy was thinking that. I was saying that that's a thought that I had.
I know how you injured your back now, David, because you were reaching so hard for this tape.
Don't make me laugh, because it's going to throw my back out again. That's very funny. That was good. No, what I'm trying to say is that I had the unbidden thought of, for any of us, the difference between being in the park and needing emergency medical services like that and being in our, you know, warm, safe homes with microphones and broadcasting our voices across the internet is very, very minor. The circumstances set up is very minor. So what the show did for me in that moment was engender empathy for people of all kinds of circumstances. And in my own life, what circumstances, how lucky am I that I did not end up in those, in a really extreme set of life circumstances, which is the lesson that I think McKay was trying to impart on Ogilvy, which is, why would you start using to hide the pain, right? To treat your wounds psychologically and physically. So I'm not talking about Ogilvy. I'm talking about me having this.
Yeah, no, I'm all with you there, right? Like that is exactly what she was trying to say. That's what you're getting out of the show. That's what I'm getting out of the show, because you and I have empathy. Ogilvy does not. And Ogilvy did not get that out of that interaction. That's what I'm arguing. I'm not saying that's not what the show was saying. I'm saying that Ogilvy is not watching the same show we are.
No, he's not.
God damn it, Ogilvy. Just get out of here. Just quit already.
So the line is two kinds of people. The phrase, I just had it. The only two things I hate in this world are people who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch. And that's what Michael Caine says to Mike Myers as Austin Powers' father to son.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's a very funny line.
I've only seen like the first half of the first Austin
Powers. Oh, okay. We're doing a Mike Myers filmography thing.
Oh, man.
The film fest.
The last you know what movie is an awful movie that I used to watch all the time as a kid? Well, not kid, but like
I'm sure you can tell me.
Was The Love Guru, which killed his career.
Never saw that one.
Oh, it's awful. It's absolutely awful. It's just a Deepak Chopra parody.
Okay.
Basically. It's very bad.
Looks, I can see.
Wildly offensive. Really. He did that and The Cat in the Hat like 2 years apart, and both of those together just got him off the big screen for years and years.
Okay. Well, we might.
I think that's why I like the movie The Love Guru, is that it was so bad that it just destroyed a super successful career.
Yeah, I mean, he had been on quite the role. So
yeah.
Maybe it won't be a Austin Powers, but maybe sort of buffoonish.
Or like a parody fest?
Yeah, because I'm thinking of Peter Sellers and the Pink Panther. I'm thinking of Austin Powers, something along those lines where we get
you smart. Know, you could do
something
like that, you know?
That'd be good. Okay. All right, I'll think on it. If anybody's got any suggestions. You could probably
even find enough like parody spy movies to do a full list because that was a whole thing for a while.
I like it. Okay, cool. Well, if people got suggestions, write in or hit me up on the Discord. What's next on our list?
Oh, you know, plenty of stuff. So she gets back. Roxy's there.
Right. Oh, yeah. We started this Roxy's all talking dead. About
yep,
Roxy.
Yep, yeah. Yep. Roxy's dead. Everyone's sad, Javadi especially. And did her older son ever talk to her? We don't even know.
Yeah, we don't. And in the way that the show moves, we don't know that we're going to have anything else with Roxy and her family for the rest of the season. So
I think we will. I don't think they're going to let that one sit. I think McKay is going to try to, you know, comfort. It's it was also interesting, the death doula. I can't remember her name.
Oh yeah, the night charge nurse. I will look her up.
She's going, you know, you spend your time with all these people and then it's just over. It's crazy.
Lena Hanzo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be tough. And she's like, "No, I just want to work because I can work through it and that'll be more because I don't want to sit with this."
Yeah.
And it's like,
especially she just lost a source of income. She's got to work.
True, the second job. Right. Should we talk about Brenda as Azurmendi?
Yes. Son Micah.
This was the young boy who was brought in unresponsive.
Yes. Ooh, that's tough. That's a tough one. Because it's, you know, Santos is going, oh, well, she probably, or was it Santos? Or was
it was not Santos.
It was not Santos Kwan. This time. Yeah. It was Joy Kwan. She was pulling a Santos, assuming
she was pulling an Ogilvy too, because Ogilvy was doing the same thing where he was like, "Oh, have you tried water aerobics?" She was like, "You let your kid play unattended?" And she's like, "It's a safe neighborhood." Like, Joy, it has nothing to do with the fact that he was in the back of the car.
Yeah.
So, you know, where's the line here, people? Where's the line?
Yeah, it's tough, right? Accidents happen. And you just hope that that's not the kind of accident that happens.
Right. And I feel for the mom as well. You know, we don't know all of her circumstances, but the way that they're showing us of her character is that she's probably a little bit tapped out. She's probably a little bit exhausted with childcare and all of the emotional labor of running her house and trying to live up to certain stereotypes and social conventions about how gender normative roles and how households are run and that kind of stuff. So she seemed exhausted to me. And so to then consider harming herself in that way, that's an extreme circumstance, right? Anytime our brains are talking to us like that, that's an extreme circumstance.
Yeah. Also, look, obviously she's not thinking rationally right now, but maybe wait to find out if your son is brain dead before you do that. He's going to wake up and be like, "Where's my mom?" You know? Boy.
It's rough.
Boy, don't do that.
I did do a quick internet search on her last name, and it's a Basque surname, which means blue mountain. And the name Micah, it means one who is like God. So I didn't know if I don't know if in Pittsburgh there's a large Basque community or just because her last name was just kind of popped out at me especially when Dr. Al Hashimi calls to her. So
yeah,
I was curious what they're doing with that. But you know, this show is just good at just taking a cross section of society, of backgrounds and socioeconomic factors and religious and national identity, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Well, Joy was not doing her best on this case. I think we both agree on that.
Yes. She was a little bit harsh, but she's not, you know, she's flagging something that needs to be flagged, but you don't challenge the mom of the dying patient, child.
Yeah. Look, it's something that you need to get to the bottom of, but
yeah,
maybe not while you're trying to save the son. Like, maybe figure out what's going on first.
Yeah, exactly. Follow up the questions. Did you catch that Howard made it through surgery?
Oh, I did not.
Yeah.
Who said that?
There was, I believe it was Dana, and they were doing like a little status update of like rooms and that the fact that baby Jane Doe is still waiting for youth services. And but she said the diverticulitis patient Howard made it through surgery. So it was
I'm so glad.
Yeah, blink and you miss it sort of line.
I hope he has a nice relationship with his sister now. I don't think we're going to get resolution on that. I think we just have to try to hope that he then went to go, his sister went and visited, or he went and visited. But yeah, that's good to hear, because he was like 50-50. Woof.
Yeah, it was rough. What did you think of Javadi and her mom gloving up together, mother-daughter team?
The only good Robbie moment of this episode was when he's like, Javadi, glove up and let's show your mom why you belong in the ER. I mean, some other doctor needs to directly go to her mom and say, like, look, I respect you as a surgeon. In our department, you need to let us mentor your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be here to do that. If you're here, you're here as a professional. You're not here as her mom.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and this is, again, force field, right? Boundaries. Right. Stop messing with your child's career within the sphere of her current residency, or not residency, but medical student, whatever you call it. So,
I mean, what is going on though with like, oh, did you do this? Did you miss this? Like, what?
That was rough. Dude,
come on.
That was not cool. That was definitely not cool.
That was not okay.
Even though I will say Dr. Shamshi is a baller, right? She got it. She got right in there and clamped off that aorta without any under the stress of an emergency situation, right? Because normally when you're not at the street level practicing street medicine, you know, you have time for these things and you work in these sort of controlled fashion as opposed to the run and gun nature of the emergency department. She did her job and she did it really well. So there's we can see why she is feared by many and all.
She's feared and loved.
Exactly.
Yeah, and Javadi doing the internal compressions. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I could not survive this whole thing. I would be on the floor already.
I liked Robbie doing the little seal clapping hand motions. Get in there.
Yeah. I was glad though that Robbie stuck up for her, because that was, you know, and it really pisses me off, this whole street level medicine thing. Like, lady, the patients don't get to you without the street level medicine.
Exactly.
They would be dead before they got to your operating table if you did not have this level of
medicine. If they just rolled them in off the ambulance straight into surgery, This is an important step in the continuum of care for any patients.
It just reminds me, I know that it's a different thing, but it reminds me sort of people who are mean to retail workers, mm-hmm. because they see them as beneath themselves, mm-hmm. right? Like Dr. Shamshi, clearly, and we saw this with a bunch of the surgical staff, this seems to be a whoever's on the writer staff has had a bad experience with surgeons, because all the surgeons are like this. They just all have like God complexes, and they're all like, everybody else is dumber than me and blah, blah, blah.
Well, maybe we'll, when I talk to Sarah, we'll double check that. And maybe that's the case. Maybe they're doing something.
Sarah, let's name your top three least favorite surgeons in your career.
By classification or name? Like, name them out?
No, let's name them.
Name and
let's
shame?
Let's blast them out there. No.
Don't think that's going to happen.
No.
But yeah, poor Mr. Green. They missed whatever. Ogilvy missed whatever.
Like his third fuck up too.
Is it? What's his other two?
The first one was he pulled the glass out.
Oh, right. That's right.
Maybe it's his second fuck up. But okay. Oh, no. The second one was he missed the diagnosis with Javadi because they were looking for something complicated and it was just like lime juice.
Right.
And then this is the third one.
All right. Well,
the second one I think is the least severe, but like one in three are really bad.
I'm glad you're keeping track, John. And I
do you see what I'm saying, though?
Like, top of Ogilvy.
He has messed up more than any other doctor in the show. It just shows to me like an incompetent white man failing upward. And I hate it. An incompetent, unempathetic white man failing upward. Congratulations, everyone.
I'm just having fun watching you twist yourself in knots. Well, at least they stayed ahead of it, and Mr. Green will hopefully get himself sorted out.
Yeah, they stayed ahead of it like Marty McFly holding onto a car with a skateboard.
Right, like, whoa! But that, yeah, again, for Mohan, and then Mohan and Robbie, that's not great either, because she's kind of distracted.
Yep.
She's stressed out.
As you point out here in your outline, McKay hands off her patience to Mohan, and Mohan's like, I got it.
She's
half in, half out.
Exactly. Which they're also telling us that a little bit of that storyline with Mel, and somebody pointed this out, that there was like a pancreatitis that Mel was supposed to go see that we didn't see her see. Now, that could just be the show just, you know, in the flow. But if you're on the emergency department, you got to be on the ball.
Yeah.
And if you're distracted, right, we can see the consequences of that distraction. So I'm a little nervous for Mel too, because the show is not above laying out track like this for these kinds of storylines. And I'm thinking of you, Curtis Lawson, Mr. 0.14 BAC. And you know, they've been laying out the track of violence against hospital staff the whole season, little drops here and there. And then they end this episode with that, with Emma. And I was like, I almost threw my laptop out the window. I was so pissed. I was like, how can you do that to us? How do you do this storyline and then leave us with that parting shot? I was just like, double birds at the writers.
That is my least favorite kind of cliffhanger. I'm not going to say it's a test, because then you'll add it to the outlines and then we'll have another outline. But, you know, that fails my cliffhanger test of is it a what will happen or a how will people react?
Mm.
It is a what will happen. That is, will he strangle her or not?
Right.
And do I think they're going to have Emma die? No, I don't. But it is a cheap cliffhanger. And this show has been guilty of that several times. I don't want to absolve it from anything. I think it bothers us more in this season because we're not binging it.
Right. We're watching real time sort of and catching up, but we can't jump to the next episode.
Right.
And then they do it to Emma, who is sweet and is getting her on the job training. And she's doing well. She's meeting and in some cases exceeding expectations for her position. It's a real intentional button press of the audience to really get us all riled up
and
get bees in our bonnets.
And what do you do here? This guy is clearly very confused, right? Like, but it is self-intoxication, right? And often if you are the reason you're intoxicated, cops are not going to give you a break.
Right.
You know?
So a 0.14 blood alcohol is between 6 and 8 drinks for his height weight. I looked up real quick online.
Hour?
No. That's a good question. I didn't do a time factor.
I think the time factor matters on that.
It does as you're breaking down and metabolizing it.
Yeah.
But anyway, to get a blood alcohol of 0.14, you've got to have at least between six and eight drinks for a guy that. So the question is why is he sort of getting psychotic and sort of like whacked out? Is he on some other kind of medication or like what else is going on?
Or he could just be really aggressive in general and really drunk.
His buddy certainly was not like, oh my God, my friend, I got to stick around. He was like, I'll see you in a couple of hours. That was, that tells you a lot about that group of gentlemen.
Yeah. You know, I said I've had to be in the hospital with my father when he was not fully with it. Mm-hmm. And when he came to, once he tried to swat a needle out of a doctor's hand because he was not with it. But that was not because he was drunk. That was because he had like a disorder that was clouding his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody tried to follow up with him on that. It was a med student doctor for sure. And he was like, you know what? I'm leaving. And I was like, oh man. I felt for him, but at the same time, I was like, dude, you got to keep it together a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But again, this is a willfully altered person.
Right.
At least in some way.
What else? I think we kind of covered it. The only thing is the with Roberto and the shoulder or the elbow dislocation.
We didn't talk about Duke really. Well, we did a little bit.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about Duke.
Got cancer.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Duke. Yeah.
They're going for a cancer line here, I think.
More or less. And the fact that Robbie isn't going to bail. So here's the other thing about predicting the show. We were all like, oh, Robbie's getting on his motorcycle without his helmet and he's going to ride and die. And then Langdon's going to have to save him. And him and Santos are going to be on the hospital, you know, on the meeting the helicopter, blah, blah, blah. Right. This show could zig and zag at any moment. And it's sort of like, there go all your thoughts and plans about where
we're going. I never thought he was going. Right.
And here we are. I don't think he's going to go because he's definitely wants to make sure that Duke is taken care of.
He's going to spend a weekend in the Poconos. That's his vacation.
Fair enough. The only thing I did want to say, though, about the dislocated elbow thing, and it made me really laugh out loud, was when Roberto was screaming, you know, when they were reducing his elbow. They cut to a shot of, is it Donnie, the nurse practitioner?
I think so, yeah.
Out in the emergency department, yeah, it was Donnie, you know, prepping some injection or something like that. And just screaming, everybody's like turning to look at the screaming that's going on and over in the curtain. And Donnie's just like carrying on with his work. It's just like, you know, it was so great. It's like, yeah, whatever. He didn't even register it. I was like, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah. He's a pro. So that bracelet really changes the context of that scene, doesn't it?
I was wondering why, and that is a subtle, great little subtle element.
Right. Because Santos is like, why are you holding on to the baseball? This and that. And like, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, there is some kind of compulsion happening with the baseball.
Right.
But at the same time, there is a legitimate reason he doesn't want to be numbed up either.
And he didn't say it, yeah. Right? He didn't say, hey, I'm a former addict, right. Or I've had a history, right?
Nor should he have to, right? He has the right to decline morphine. And
he does, which is really something.
he got through it, though.
He did. It would have eased the social circumstances around it if he just said, look, I have a history with substances, you know, opioids or substances.
Yeah.
And then they would have gone, oh, okay, well, maybe they would have offered something else or whatever, but he just went baller and said, I'm going to go.
Yeah, they could have been like, look, we'll give you all the Tylenol we have, right?
Right.
Like,
as much as the safest to take in one dose.
Right. It's tough because you want to balance like letting people have their privacy, but also like doctors need a full medical history to treat you.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why they ask a lot of questions because there's drug interactions, there's complications to things, there's histories of stuff. There was on that medical complication thing, something that really blew me away. Not blew me away, but it was just like one of those things that twigged that was like, wow, this is like a really complex thing. When Robbie says, why do we add this other thing when we've given whole blood units or whatever? And Ogilvy missed the question, but Javadi got it, which was basically to prevent hypoglycemia, I think, because we're changing the sugar levels in the blood is what I picked up. And so we have to, you know, add some stuff there to balance all of that out. Yeah. I'm like, man, seriously, what these doctors have to know is wild to keep all that flow in your mind of this and that. It really is impressive. And so when we think about the quality of healthcare, not the delivery, but the quality of healthcare that we have available to us, it really is pretty extraordinary.
It's crazy. And, you know, if you have a general practitioner, yeah, they can go and Google what they need to and consult their medical
Dr. Google
books. I mean, look, let's be honest. Everybody in every expert field uses Google to an extent.
It's true.
You know, now it's something other thing.
And now we can't get away from Gemini with Google, so.
Well, a lot of learning is just learning how to learn things. Like that's a lot of becoming an expert is like knowing what questions to ask.
Right.
But you know, when you're in the emergency room, like a lot of times you don't have time, right? You have to just know at least the basics.
You just got to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that we haven't really talked about was Mecca. Mel and Becca. Sorry.
I was like, portmanteau over there.
What? Yeah.
Are you going on a pilgrimage? I wasn't sure what was happening. Yeah. it's Mel needs to tone it the fuck down. I'd like the number of her parents. That's for emergencies. This is an emergency. Like, what? What is going on here?
On the red phone, yo. She was like, she is freaked out. But I get it. Like, her world is crashing.
Yeah.
Right.
But, like, yeah. I think Mel has some issues with change.
Yes,
that is a big thing, and she kind of confesses to it, right? Like, she's gonna move on, and then I'm gonna have nobody, and we watch Elf together all the time, and
164 times was it? I think something like that. Rough. And I was thinking of Becca too in this kind of way that, like, well, maybe she's kind of like a teenager. You know, she's safe and stable. And she's making progress in certain areas of her life.
Right.
She's
didn't ask me. I asked him to.
Yeah. Like, I wanted it. Like, you know, and she's withholding at the same time. At the same time, she's growing up. And she wants the freedom and the space to have agency and to know what life is like. She's going to be living in kind of a residential group home probably for the rest of her life. And if there's areas of her life that she can have full agency and autonomy on, that's got to feel good as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the same time, she's not being straight with Mel. And so it's hard on Mel.
But also, like, why does she have to be straight with Mel? You know what I mean? Like, Mel, she does not owe Mel an explanation of her sex life. You know, like, oh, you lied to me. It's like, does your older sister, is your older sister owed knowing everybody you sleep with? No.
Yeah, but it's knowing that, that, you know, how do we take care of each other in our relationships? And how is, you know, Mel has given a lot of herself to Becca as a caregiver. Mm-hmm. Even with just durable power of attorney and supportive, what do they call it? Supportive decision making. She's not her, legal guardian or any of that kind of stuff. The fact that you're starting to go through some stuff and your life is moving on in a different way, just from a loving relationship, that's something to withhold that, knowing that that might hurt the other person. I think there's a question there saying, you know, hey, I love you and I respect you and my life is changing and I'm going to go do this thing for a while now. So you're skeptical.
I'm just, okay. In a normal relationship, sure, maybe she would want to tell her, but that's one, her choice. And two, I think that we can see that maybe Mel probably has acted certain ways in the past that showed her that maybe she wouldn't take this very well.
Mm-hmm.
And Mel's not really respecting her autonomy here. And I think perhaps on a different day, Mel would have reacted a little bit more level-headedly.
Mm-hmm.
This is like one of the worst days of her life. Like, she is just having a terrible day.
Right.
Poor Mel.
All the more reason for her sister to say, hey, I get this might be upsetting for you, and you know this is private for me, and this is how I'm choosing to live my life. So
yeah, I don't think Mel is owed the information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I maybe, you know, mentioned her casually. I'm seeing somebody, mm-hmm.
But 6 months, she kept it for, you know, she kept that private for 6 months.
You don't need her like holding up a hot dog with a donut and you know saying, Mel, this is what's happening right now.
No, we don't.
There's a level of, you know, you can have a you can have a level of privacy in your life. You know what I mean? even with someone who is your in part caregiver.
Sure. And I also you know, empathize with Mel here in from that caretaker frustration, right? She has put herself, she bends over backwards to make sure that her sister is taken care of. And then her sister's like, okay, nope, bye, I'm out. I want to leave now.
I mean,
I'm going to go watch the fireworks with somebody else. She
did
get
yelled at, though, right? Like, Mel did blow up at her, and in a way that I don't think it was justified. It was not great. Mel was not at her best.
But she's human. Yeah, no, and Mel is human, and she deserves that as well. Becca could be understanding in that regard as well.
I think up until the point where Mel starts yelling at her, yes, Becca could be understanding. I mean, Becca clearly has, you know, a condition that may
Yeah,
in her ability to use that, to do that, and to empathize.
But she's not ignorant of emotion. I mean, yeah, no. She has her extra, and she's functional in the world. So,
yes. But I'm just saying, like, if you know, if Mel hadn't yelled at her, I would have been totally like, they both could be a little bit more communicative.
So you're going to put Mel and Ogilvy in a closet together?
Mel acted poorly in this moment, right?
Of course she did. She's a human being.
She acted poorly in this moment.
She felt and
it is well within Becca's rights to say, I'm done with this right now.
Yeah.
I'm going home.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk later.
Yeah. And part of Langdon's job is to make sure that, you know, any patient comes in, is there's nothing funky going on with her. Right. And they're saying, but yeah, Mel doesn't have the right to use the red phone to get the parents' information.
No, just Jesus Christ. She is crashing out, as the kids say.
Right. Oh, man. What a show, right? It's really putting us all through our paces.
What a show. And we did it. We got through our episode. And I guess we should talk about what else is happening on the Lorehounds Network.
What else is happening on the Lorehounds Network? You guys recorded a One Piece today?
We did. I was going to put it out tomorrow since we have this coming out today.
Cool.
And we did episodes 1 through 3 of the new season.
Excellent.
A lot of fun.
What do you think of the season so far?
Oh, it's great. It's great. David, I think you would hate it. But it's like unapologetically cringe.
Okay.
But like not like socially awkward, but like, just it's just this like hope punk smile on his face guy just like messing stuff up through the world.
Okay.
And I don't know. I just don't. I don't get the sense that you would like it.
Well, now I'm going to have to like maybe check in on an episode and see how I respond to it. I mean, I did think that I was not going to like Mean Girls, and I did really enjoy
it. I thought you weren't going to like Mean Girls either. So maybe I'm the wrong judge.
Right. So go with me here, though, and we'll talk about it on the 11sies pod when we record that episode. But I think Mean Girls functionally is the Better Off Dead of its day.
I saw you write that, and I don't know what that means. So you'll have to explain that more thoroughly.
I'll explain that. But check us out when we record that. That should be at the end of this week, I believe.
Yep.
For subscribers. I recorded with Lisa and Brian, a couple of our community members, our inaugural show on the podcast called Into the West, where we do in memoriams of actors and other filmmakers who have left this world. And Lisa and Brian wanted to start off with Gene Hackman. So we did a review of Hackman's biography and filmography, and we picked several films. That will go out on Tuesday relative to this. So in a couple of days, look for that. And then I also recorded a bit of a check-in on the a status of what's happening with Dune. With the trailer and Dune Prophecy, and then with the Dune Minute guys and their current project right now. And that'll be out on Wednesday of this week relative to this podcast.
Very cool. More pit content on the way.
You guys are doing, what's that movie that everybody's going to see and they just can't stop?
Oh, yeah, Project Hail Mary. Are you in on that? I don't know. I'm not seeing that till Thursday anyway.
Right. No, it was kind of a joke because I was like, what is this movie that everybody's freaking out about?
I know. Me and Alicia were on board the whole time, and you're like discovering this movie in like, real time. And I was like, David, where you been? This has been like a highly anticipated movie.
Massively. Like there were like 6 or 8 pods in my feed the other morning when it broke, you know, when it came out. So
it's a great story. I listened to the audiobook for it, and I would recommend listening to the audiobook over reading the book because of reasons I can't say for spoilers, but like it just works a lot better for the audiobook. Although the trailers are spoiling exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. So I don't know why we have trailers anymore. It's just, I don't know why we have movies. We just watch the trailers.
Right, yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. Trailers tell you what to expect, not what to anticipate. So,
right. Right.
And I think Alicia's got some 28 Years Later, the Bone Temple coverage coming up as well.
Yep. I'm recording a Silmarillion story on Friday with Marilyn.
Ooh, exciting.
So we're moving on with Turin.
Okay.
This is the year where it all ends. We're finishing up the Silmarillion this
year. That's crazy. And because then that means you're starting your Cosmere coverage.
That's right. We're already 2 episodes into recording on that.
Okay. Got those in the can, and you're going to release those in the near
future. In June, we're starting.
Okay. We don't have any. What else big stuff do we? I got to check our show guide. That's another thing that we offer for folks. I think Radioactive Rambling was one of our affiliate podcasts. They're going to be doing some Invincible coverage.
Yep. I think they're already working on that. They had a Zencaster issue, but now they're
okay.
That's good. You know, getting back to it.
I think Paradise, when Paradise ends, I'll probably catch up with Jean and Nicole from Nevermind the Music to talk about that. And I think Alicia's also going to do something with for The Bride and Wuthering Heights with Lisa. And then I know that her and Jean and I believe Luke are going to do some Daredevil coverage. That's coming up. And then we don't have anything really big. We just got a bunch of movies coming up, I think, later in the next quarter. Hamlet, Devil Wears Prada, Star Wars, The Mandalorian, and Grogu.
Yeah,
plenty of stuff coming. I don't know about that.
I might do a what you're reading on Dungeon Crawler, Carl, and try to sell you on it.
Sounds good.
If you're willing to be my sounding board.
I am willing. I am willing to be subjected. Anthony and Steve are carrying on their newlywed season of Properly Howard Movie Review. What is up next? Forget what movie's up next, but they just dropped one on The Last Starfighter, which is a great classic movie. What do they got coming up next? Darkman from 1990.
Ooh.
So, and just remember, you don't have to watch the movies to enjoy their conversation. That is the conceit of the show.
Every episode ends up being about Teen Wolf anyway, so, you know.
Steve would be glad to know that you feel that way. And then, of course, Nevermind the Music is doing their thing with music and psychology. I don't know what else they have got going on right now. They just had a mailbag episode. That was a lot of fun to listen to. And I think I'm looking through their thing. Sidetrack. Linkin Park is the next episode up. Numb by Linkin Park.
All right.
Identity of a Scream. That sounds like fun.
Nice.
Yeah. I see they got some Fleetwood Mac coming up. That'll be fun.
There's rumors of it, at least.
I think that's it. Are we done?
You missed my whole joke. It's okay.
Wait, I'm sorry. I totally missed your joke.
You said there's Fleetwood Mac coming, and I said, well, there's rumors of it.
It was just too subtle for me.
That's all I had.
You are too subtle for me.
Yeah, let's thank everybody.
All right. Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Doof71, and Athena Agilea, Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard, and Adrian are our Discord server boosters. They donate a little bit extra to make our Discord a more fun and active place for our community, which
you
is
get extra
where we
stickers.
Gather. Extra stickers. Gosh. The biggest thing is just having a permanent link.
Yeah, that's nice. That's
very
nice.
That's the biggest thing. So. Anyway, you want to thank the Lore Masters?
Yes, thank you to our Lore Masters, Martian, Michael G., Michelle E., SC, Peter OH, Nancy M., Doof71, Brian8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Andra B., Kwang Yu, Nathan T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Lestu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Ilmariel, Paul K., Rocky Zim, Jessica A., Red Zippy, the TCS Dopamini, Catch It, Ellen R., Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W., Cassie K., Chumbaruni, Katia, Josh Liu, Paint in PDX, Corey G., Quinch, and Adrian. Thanks everyone for all your support. We'll be back in the hospital next week.
See you then. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.